Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Right now, a political forum is underway for the candidates running for Attorney General for the District of Columbia. D.C. Ward 5 Councilmember Kenyon McDuffie is not part of it. He was disqualified as a candidate by the D.C. Board of Elections after the campaign of candidate Bruce Spiva challenged McDuffie's eligibility. Today, activists are raising questions about the board's decision, and tomorrow, McDuffie's campaign will be before the D.C. Court of Appeals to challenge the board's ruling. And tonight, we discuss the rules and the politics of this race. My guests are William Lightfoot, senior attorney and former D.C. council member, and D.C. activist Tony Lewis, Jr. If you have comments, if you have questions, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, W-H-U-R, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. This is not an endorsement of McDuffie's campaign, and we actually do have a statement from Bruce Spiva's campaign, which we will be sharing with you in just a bit. Mr. Lightfoot, Mr. Lewis, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Sure. Mr. Lewis, let me ask you first. There was supposed to be a rally today in support of Kenyon McDuffie's campaign. Why rally? Why not just wait for this process to play out?
That's a great question. I think it's more about the rally was you know, not so much about Kenyon as much as it was about the people wanting to have an opportunity to say we want to make a choice for who we want to be the AG. That this was bigger than just Councilmember McDuffie and his removal, right? That this was about people, democracy, and people saying we want to make the decision on who our AG should be. And at the end of the day, we don't agree with the fact that we feel like he does qualify. And so the rally, because of the weather, it was being moved to tomorrow at 14th and U at 6 p.m. And I hope people can come out, all people, right, and voice their opinion for democracy. You can vote for whoever you want to vote for. And I love how you framed. This is not an endorsement of McDuffie as much as it is about a free and fair election. We don't feel like this is fair, what's happening to him.
Mr. Lightfoot, let me have you really put on your lawyer cap, plug it in, and turn it way up. What happened? What did the rules say as far as what the Board of Elections looked at?
All right. Let me see if I can break this down in simple terms. As a matter of law, this is an exercise in statutory construction, meaning there is a specific statute passed by the city council that defines certain qualifications for this position. And the court and the Board of Elections looks at the language of that statute and determines whether or not what it really means. They look to see if it's ambiguous. If it is ambiguous, the court and the board will then look outside the actual language to determine what the phrases actually mean. And in this case, the operative language refers to engaged in the practice of law and the determination of what the word employed means. Now, those phrases are used in the statute. So if we're talking about engaged in the practice of law, does that mean that a person must be representing clients, or does it mean that the person must be using the skills and the judgment of a lawyer? And when looking at the word employed as an attorney, does that mean the job that the person has actually has the title, has the qualification or the title of it says you're employed as a staff attorney or employed as an attorney of the U.S. government or employed as an attorney in the district government? So it's going to turn on how the court interprets those phrases.
Correct. With that said, gentlemen, before we move forward, I did have an opportunity earlier today to have an extensive conversation with Nick Jacobs. He is the spokesperson for the D.C. Board of Elections. And I asked him about the candidacy process. He said a lot. I want you to listen to it, and I'll have both of you respond on the other side.
The board reached its determination based on how it read the law and the arguments that were presented at the hearing.
My question is, isn't it likely that if this issue were not challenged, that we would not be in this position?
I'm not sure what you mean by this position.
In other words,
I'm not hedging. I just want to give you as good an answer as I can.
No member of the board or the staff looked at the law and said that the council member would not be eligible. So this was not something, obviously, that the board itself considered. This was brought to them as a challenge by some, you know, by the campaign of someone else. And I guess my question is, why didn't the board look at the council member's eligibility prior to this challenge?
But do we know that they did?
Sure. No, it's a great question, and the answer as to why we didn't look ahead of time comes down to two things. Number one, no one asked us to look, which is to say, neither Councilman McDuffie, if he was concerned about it, asked, and none of the other candidates in the race raised it as a formal issue before the board. And that's fairly critical and leads to my second point, because the Board of Elections is not and should not be in the business of determining qualifications ahead of time, because it runs the risk of favoritism, partisanship, and so forth. So it was only in response to a challenge could we address the issue.
Why not? If you have, whose responsibility is it to determine whether or not someone is eligible to run for public office in the District of Columbia, if not the board?
Well, it primarily falls on the candidate. When the candidate files a declaration of candidacy, part of that declaration includes an attestation that he or she meets all of the qualifications for the office they're seeking.
That was Nick Jacobs, spokesperson for the D.C. Board of Elections, talking with me earlier today about the candidacy process. By the way, we are talking about the disqualification of Kenyon McDuffie, D.C.'s Ward 5 council member. He was running and plans to continue to run for the D.C. Attorney General's office. There is a D.C. Board of Appeals hearing tomorrow, Court of Appeals, I should say, tomorrow, where this issue will be figured out. So after hearing that, Mr. Lightfoot, the question I have for you is, he makes an interesting point. Whose responsibility is it to determine legal candidacy for office in the District of Columbia? I mean, is that something that the board, in your opinion, should look at?
Well, that's an excellent question. The board certainly has the authority to look at the qualifications of people who want to put their names on the ballot. But the way the board operates, they only do so in response to a complaint. That is to say, one of the other people running for office says that one of their opponents is not qualified. The board has taken the position that they will not, on their own, quote, sua sponte, investigate whether or not a person is qualified. Other types of adjudicatory bodies will take up a matter sua sponte. They don't wait for a complaint. They will actually, if they have any notice by reading the newspaper, following the documents that are filed, then certain government entities will sua sponte investigate someone's qualifications. I will say on this point, I think the board is correct. The board should not be determining who's qualified to sit on the to go on the ballot, other than for the most minimal qualifications. And considering that elections really are competitions, I think we can rely first upon the opponents in the race to challenge each other. And then secondly, of course, it is the voters themselves who determine who is qualified and best qualified to serve the interest of the public.
Your thoughts, Tony, about what Mr. Jacobs shared with us in that interview?
Well, I think I agree wholeheartedly with Mr. Lightfoot, and I think particularly the last point. I think in this city, we have had a history of the voters coming to determine who is best to lead. I think that's important. I think when we start to invoke the Board of Elections early on, we can sort of, you know, like the gentleman mentioned, right, it can have an adverse effect on our elections. And the people should make that decision. And in this case as well, I mean, when you look at sort of the exact language, when it talks about an attorney employed in the District of Columbia by the United States or the District of Columbia, it doesn't even necessarily say to be working in the role as an attorney, right? And that if you are an attorney employed by the District of Columbia, that should make you eligible. So when we talk about things being ambiguous or it can be left up to like a subjective view, this is where we are. And the challenge really has so much to do not only with sort of that point, but also about sort of like being qualified to run or to be the AG. And when you look at somebody who's been a council member for nearly a decade, you know, how could that person not be qualified? And so when I hear that as a district resident, as a Ward 5 resident, as a native Washingtonian, I feel a way in the sense that there's sort of a deeper dig at people that are homegrown, the people that have served this community, that they're not good enough to lead in that position. And so for the Board of Elections to side with that, to me, again, that was something that was very problematic from my perspective.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the disqualification of Ward 5 council member Kenyon McDuffie in his campaign for D.C. Attorney General. What do you think? Do you believe that he should have been disqualified? Do you think that the D.C. code as relates to eligibility to run for AG is poorly written? What do you think? Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Now, I will say that there is reporting today that the campaign manager for McDuffie's campaign has been removed, and a new campaign manager has indeed been hired. Chuck Thies is out as the campaign manager for Kenyon McDuffie. We can read into that what you will, Mr. Lightfoot, but it seems, at least on the surface, that maybe the campaign manager is responsible for determining whether or not there aren't any slip-ups.
Well, I have chaired 5 mayoral campaigns this century, so I certainly know the responsibilities of a chairperson of a committee, okay? And I know Chuck Thies. I think he's very good. I don't have any understanding of why he was removed, or why he's left, I should say. There could be many different reasons.
Right.
What is important to keep in mind here is the bigger issue involved with this challenge relates to the voters. It's not relevant whether it's Kenyon McDuffie or some other person. What's important is whether or not the people of D.C. have an opportunity to choose their leaders. And what's important to keep in mind, 7 council members who were on the council at the time the legislation passed, including the current chairperson, Phil Mendelson, the past mayor of the District of Columbia, Vince Gray, who's still on the council, and 5 other council members, have all filed a brief with the court saying it was not their intent to exclude a council member who was a member of the D.C. bar in good standing. Mm-hmm. And this is important because, again, you know, are you going to exclude somebody who's engaged in public service so that the only people that qualify or may qualify are those engaged in private practice, and that would be inappropriate. Don't you want to have the opportunity to vote for somebody who has a motive of public service and finding the common good, as opposed to a lawyer who has profit motive in their practice? And that's the bigger issue. Do the voters get a chance to choose who their leaders are going to be?
Well, as I said earlier, we did have a statement from the campaign of Bruce Spiva, and it reads in part that the people of D.C. deserve an attorney general who is ready on day one to take on the responsibilities of the office. That's why the council enacted and district voters approved these specific minimum qualifications that Councilmember McDuffie failed to meet. This from Elena Hayworth, campaign manager for Bruce Spiva. It goes on to say the people of D.C. deserve an attorney general who is a fighter, ready to stand up to the powerful and do what's right, something Bruce has made clear with the challenge and has done his entire career. I need to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk to Mocha calling from D.C., also Mark calling from D.C. We're talking about the disqualification of Ward 5 council member Kenya McDuffie from the AG's race. Of course, there is a D.C. Court of Appeals hearing tomorrow where they're going to work it out one way or another. Will he be back in the race? What do you think about these decisions and the politics of the AG's race? We'll be back in just a bit. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM Channel 141, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about the Attorney General's race, specifically the D.C. Attorney General's race and the disqualification of Ward 5 council member Kenyon McDuffie, the challenge leveled by Bruce Spiva. The D.C. Board of Elections, a little more than a week ago, disqualifying the council member from running for the office of D.C. Attorney General. My guests are William Lightfoot, senior attorney and former D.C. council member, and D.C. activist Tony Lewis, Jr. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise I will get to your phone calls. Mocha, calling from D.C., thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
And thank you for having me and the gentlemen that are joining you, Harold. We appreciate this conversation. I am a supporter of Kenyon McDuffie, and I think it's very important to note the district should know that this is the council member who is for the people, who has done many, many, many legislative laws for the people of Washington, D.C. This is the gentleman who knows the law very well, who has practiced for the last 10-plus years, who has had legislation submitted for baby bonds, returning citizens. Don't forget, he was the chairperson for the Judiciary Committee. He was also the chairperson for the Business Economic Development in Washington, D.C. This Kenyon McDuffie, Councilmember Kenyon McDuffie, has shown and proven and given all he has to give to legislation, to the people of the District of Columbia. Not only that he is a homegrown man in this town, but he made certain that not just Washingtonians are served in this town, but everyone who resides in the District of Columbia. He is a teacher. He is well-versed on both sides of any issue. You cannot take anything away from Kenyon McDuffie because he is a teacher. He is a studier of the law. He has fought for the rights of people in the District of Columbia. All you have to do is look at his legislation
okay.
that he has written.
He's okay. Mocha, I got you. Mocha, I got you. Thank you. I appreciate your passion. But the reality is, Tony, this isn't about whether you think Kenyon McDuffie is a good man, a good politician, homegrown or not. This is about the words in the D.C. Code as it is written about this and that. And some would say the rules are the rules. The policy is the policy. The law is the law. Tony?
No, I hear that. And, you know, but I think in the way that the rules are written, I think it's still left up to interpretation. I think the way the rules are written is almost if you were, say, a general counsel for I'm going to use something like the Office of Aging, right, that mm-hmm. you would be more qualified. You would meet the minimum qualifications that we're saying that a sitting council member does not meet. I mean, I think that's really what people have to understand. If I was a general counsel at a very small district agency, right, I would be deemed eligible. And so an attorney who happened to be the Ward 5 council member for the last 10 years is being deemed not qualified. And then, you know, the statement you read from Mr. Spivey's campaign, I think, is, again, hinting at the fact that he could start at day one and be more ready than somebody who's been in public service, has been on that dais down at the council for the past 10 years. If I'm coming from corporate America, or I'm coming from K Street as a big time lawyer, then I'm more qualified than somebody that's, I think, done some things. I mean, particularly around the issues that the attorney general is responsible for, particularly juvenile justice. And I don't think there's anybody in our city who's done more for juvenile justice than Councilmember McDuffie. So I think his law skills, his legal acumen, his history really does influence how he legislated as a council member. So I think it's a correlation there. But I just think people have to really think about, when we talk about what the rules are, that's why people are why he's going to appeal, because of the fact that it is pretty ambiguous in some of the points. And you can, the framers of these rules, the framers, the writers of these rules have said that this was not their intent.
Yeah. Mark, calling from D.C. Mark, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is a couple of things. I believe, and your panelists have said this, that it should be the people's decision. And I believe Councilmember McDuffie should be able to run, because I believe the people should make the decision. However, I want to say this to the panelists and the former Councilmember Jack Evans. Councilmember Lightfoot was not on the council when this happened. But the outrage, and we're saying that the people should make the decision. Well, where was our outrage when Councilmember Vincent Orange and Jack Evans overturned term limits without the people making the decision? So what I'm saying is our panelists should have had the same outrage and concern about the people making the decision for term limits, as they are for this issue as well. So I'm saying that the scales are not balanced, and that we need to give thought to how we're making a decision on all of this. If we're for the people, we should have been for the people then, because the people should have made the decision on term limits and not council members coming and overturning it.
Mr. Lightfoot, or I'll let you respond to what Marcus is saying. I mean, like he said, you weren't on the council at the time, but so you may not have a nickel in that quarter, but I'm sure you have something to say about it.
Well, I mean, and let me just say, I agree with Mark. Absolutely. I remember the voters voted for term limits. And if you believe in democracy and that the voters have a right to choose how their leaders to be chosen, how our government is to be run, then the city council should have respected the voice of the voters, and there should have been term limits. Unfortunately, a majority of the council disagreed, and they overturned it. So I think he's right. It was wrong. It should not have been done that way, but it was. But that still doesn't make it right.
Tony, your thoughts about what Mark is sharing with us?
Yeah, I respect Mark's perspective. I think at that time I wasn't as engaged or as active, but I think one of the takeaways from that is that voters should have went back to the polls and showed those people that opposed term limits, made them in essence pay for that. And I think this is what we have, my perspective is trying to get people to be more engaged civically, right, so that council members will be more respectful of the will of the voters. So Mark, thanks for sharing that. And maybe that's what becomes like the next push. If the city, you know, the residents feel that's the best thing for our city, then that's the direction we may need to move into.
Mark, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mr. Lightfoot, there was a question that I did ask Nick Jacobs, the spokesperson for the D.C. Board of Elections, that I did not play. This was a hypothetical. So I'll ask you this. Let us say that Bruce Spiva had not challenged the candidacy of Councilmember McDuffie. And then the council member won the race. And he became the AG. Then, after becoming AG, someone then goes back and says, well, wait a minute. Based on the D.C. code, based on the law, he should not have ever been able to run because he was ineligible. Under that hypothetical, what would happen?
I am not an election lawyer. However,
I always make questions to make. I always ask questions that'll make your head hurt. But
well, you did. It's an excellent question, but I think this is the way it will be analyzed under the law. There is a time period when challenges to people's qualifications on the ballot must occur, and that's Mr. Spivey waited the appropriate period of time, and he filed his challenge during the appropriate time. So that's the specific time is the when you are to challenge. If the challenge does not occur during that time period, then it's too late to do it later. In the law, it's a doctrine called laches, L-A-C-H-E, meaning you waited too late. So by let's assume under your hypothetical, no one had challenged Kenny McDuffie's qualifications, and he gets elected. And then afterwards, someone files a challenge at the Board of Elections. The board would say it's too late. Even if Mr. McDuffie was not qualified under the statute, you only had a certain period of time to file it. It's like a statute of limitations. You didn't file on time, and now the voters have decided he's qualified and the best candidate. And we, the Board of Elections, will respect the voters. You're too late. Mr. McDuffie would then be the Attorney General for the city.
Have you ever heard of anything like this happening before for any D.C. government, D.C. elected office, where we got down into the minutiae of the law? I mean, I know that we have seen challenges in the past about signatures, residency, and the like. But in your institutional memory, do you ever remember someone having to drop out because they were declared ineligible and unable to regain eligibility before it was time to vote?
Well, one comes to mind, and let me just say, challenges to people's qualifications, particularly for petitions, you didn't get enough signatures. That happens all the time.
Right.
That happened to me when I ran for council. You know, you got to fight it, and if you lose, then you're in trouble. Tony Williams, I think it was the last time he ran for mayor, he turned in petitions and someone challenged him and said he didn't have enough signatures. And lo and behold, the board agreed. And Tony Williams' name did not appear on the ballot. However, Tony then ran a write-in campaign and he won. So I think that would kind of suit the example you're talking about. He was challenged, but then he ran a write-in campaign and he won.
So now, okay, now it's about to get messy. Because let us say that he is declared ineligible. Election lawyer that you are not, Mr. Lightfoot, but could McDuffie still run a write-in campaign?
Well, he certainly could run a write-in campaign. And then if he won the write-in campaign, I guess the question would be, does he meet the statutory requirements? And that's an excellent question. I don't know. I think that would probably be what we call in the law a question of first impression. And I don't dare venture how the a court would rule on that. Other than I do think the court still may say it's too late. You know, I don't know how you could have challenged him if he runs a write-in campaign, but The challenge period was earlier in the process, and it's now too late.
Then, Tony, based on that hypothetical, it goes back to the point that you were making in the beginning about letting the people decide.
Correct. But I think in this particular case that it will be different from, say, a mayoral campaign or a council campaign, where the thing is about the eligibility of the candidate, right? That there's a requirement that the candidate didn't meet. So even in a write-in situation, I think somebody could potentially even challenge that if the person does not meet the qualifications, then the people, no matter what the people say, that person is not fit to hold the position. And I think that's why this idea that McDuffie isn't qualified is so tragic, right? Because, you know, I think the people would absolutely speak to the fact that even if they didn't want him to be the AG, they think he would be qualified to be the AG. Yeah, so this is a very unique thing. And if people also, I think we got a lot of new people to the city that don't realize that, you know, Mr. Racine has been the only AG, right? This is a fairly new position in this city. So, this is an interesting time. We'll look back at this and say that we learned a lot from this moment.
I need to take a break, but when we come back, I have more questions about this process, including if Councilmember McDuffie loses tomorrow in court, what's next? I'll ask Mr. Lightfoot that question as well. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about the Attorney General's race in the District of Columbia and the disqualification of Ward 5 D.C. Councilmember Kenyon McDuffie. My guests are William Lightfoot, senior attorney, and former D.C. Councilmember and D.C. activist Tony Lewis, Jr. Okay, so, Mr. Lightfoot, I gave you a little bit of time to think about this, but what happens if McDuffie loses in the D.C. Court of Appeals tomorrow?
All right. Let's talk about the scenario. Let's assume that Mr. McDuffie is rejected by the Court of Appeals.
Yes.
He has a decision to make. One decision is he will run a write-in campaign, or the first one is that he decides not to run. Let's assume for the moment he would decide he will not continue his campaign. He's then got to decide what happens to all the money that he's raised. The last report I saw, Kenyon has raised almost $850,000, much of which comes from public financing. A large portion of that money he will have to return to the D.C. government because they paid him that money. The remaining money, he has some options as to whether or not to give it to other political candidates or political action committees, the Democratic organization. He could give it to a charity organization if he wants. In addition to that, of course, Kenyon would then have been in a position to tell his supporters or recommend to his supporters that they support one of the other candidates. And how effective that would be, you know, that's up to Kenyon and his supporters, but I can't comment on that other than to say my understanding is a lot of people are pretty pissed off or pretty angry about this challenge, so I find it hard to believe that Kenyon's going to be able to shift his supporters to Mr. Spiva if he wanted to. I'm not saying he would. And then the other scenario is that Kenyon decides he's going to keep running anyway, and he's going to run a write-in campaign. If he does so, which is something that Tony Williams did as mayor several years ago, I mentioned that. Tony was mayor. He tried to get on the ballot. He was disqualified, but then he ran a write-in campaign, and my belief is he was allowed to use his campaign money to continue running. Would Kenyon be allowed to use the money that he's received from public financing to continue running a write-in campaign? I don't know the answer to that. I think the answer is he'd be able to do that because nobody can stop him in the short period of time between now and the election. And then what happens if he wins the write-in campaign? We talked about that earlier. Would the Court of Appeals then negate the voice of the voters after the voters have chosen their leader? And I think the court would find a way to find Kenyon could still be the Attorney General. And I say that for this reason. It is a long-standing principle in our democracy that the laws are to be interpreted in a way to give the voters a voice. It's really a constitutional right. It's a right of people to associate with people who have similar views and similar political affiliations. So if Kenyon were rejected by the Court of Appeals, but he did run a write-in campaign, and if he won the write-in campaign, I think the Court of Appeals would then find a way to say that he's entitled to be the Attorney General, regardless of the earlier decision.
I would venture to say that would give those of us in the media a whole lot to talk about if all of that plays out. Tony, from your perspective, and you said something that struck me earlier. I believe it was Mark who called in and was talking about, you know, the voice of the people and term limits, and you said, yeah, you were not active. You were not politically active at that time, and now you are. And this is at the heart of what voting means for all of us, not just in D.C., but anywhere. Why, but in this particular case, why is this race, from your perspective, so important?
Well, I hope this doesn't set a precedent for future elections where people go and go to the board to remove people from the race, right? We know how certain things can have an ability to catch on. So that's the one thing that I hope, that in this moment, this doesn't become some kind of trend where the people's voice is not the most important thing. But aside from that, the thought, again, and this is not me saying go vote for Kenyon if he does make it on the ballot. My point, though, is that for me as a native Washingtonian, for me as somebody who has seen this guy work on Ban the Box in IRA, in the NEAR Act, in the baby bonds, in equity, in the go-go legislation. To not have a voice like that in the political space in our city, to me, is frightening. Because I have not seen anybody else represent, the interest of mine in this way. DC Native Day, I can go on and on, right? So to me, that's the most fearful thing for me, that his voice won't be, after June, or whatever is November, his voice won't be politically loud or active, right? So for me, I think that's dangerous, in my opinion. So, hopefully, the people can speak. And if he gets on the ballot and does not win, I'm fine with that. I still would have those same fears, but the people would have spoken, and I just hope that the people get an opportunity to speak, and he should be on the ballot.
But Mr. Lightfoot, on the other hand, and you have, as you said in the beginning of the program, you've run five campaigns, and politics can be seen as a very dirty business. Some people could see the challenge by Bruce Spiva as smart, shrewd. Your thoughts about that? I mean, why if McDuffie was considered by many to be the front runner, all I have to do, I just challenged him and eliminated my major competition. Some people would say, hey, that's politics.
Well, absolutely. That is politics. And let me just say, I guess I agree with Mr. Lewis on many things, but on this one, I think it is appropriate for a candidate to challenge the qualifications of their opponents, particularly with things like petitions. People get out here and forge signatures on petitions and then get themselves on the ballot. That's illegitimate. Now, speaking of, remember, Robert White.
I agree with
White,
that, sir. No pushback for me on that, Mr. Lightfoot.
Okay, that's fine. Robert White challenged Trayon's petitions. Was it right? Was it wrong? Was it smart politically? Well, it's smart politically if you're trying to reduce the size of the field. But it may be bad politics because you anger the supporters of the person that you challenge. Furthermore, the reason you raise your challenge, it may be really, inappropriate. Let's face it, Kenyon McDuffie is qualified to be the Attorney General, regardless of what the statute says. When you look at his background, he's qualified. But there's a technical reading of the statute which said he's not. Spiva was probably making a good move to try and get Kenyon off the ballot, because that frees up, it's then going to be a two-person race or a three-person race instead of a four-person race. And also, Spiva has now got his name out there. You know, people who didn't know Bruce Spiva a month ago, they know who Bruce Spiva is now. Oh, isn't that the lawyer who challenged Kenyon McDuffie? Yeah, that's who it is. So he's raised his name identification. But what is he now known for? He's known for the challenge, not for his qualifications and skills. So there's a trade-off there. And that's a decision that has to be made inside a campaign.
And I think you can talk about this being politically expedient as it relates to running for office, but in the case of what Robert White and Trayon White, they're on the council together.
Well, that then you would argue that's politically not smart.
But right, that's my point. Exactly.
Politics is about winning when you're running for office, and Robert White must have decided that Trayon had, what, like 19%, and Robert White had 18 or 19%. So Robert White figured if he could knock off Trayon, maybe he could pick up Trayon's 20% of the votes, and then that would make it a closer race between him and Mayor Bowser. That's his decision. Now, down there on the city council, he might not get along with Trayon that well anymore. He's willing to take the trade-off.
Yeah. Final thoughts from you, Tony.
First, I just want to say thanks for having me.
Sure.
And, again, my final thought is that, you know, I'm hopeful that the people will get a chance to decide who our attorney general will be, and our options will include Kenny McDuffie.
Yeah. Any final thought from you, Mr. Lightfoot?
I just want to thank you for doing this. It is important that we inform the public about these type of issues that affect our democracy and the right to vote. And so I thank you for holding this kind of discussion.
Oh, I appreciate your legal mind, and if Lord knows if I ever get any trouble, I'll give you a call. You don't take coupons, do you?
No. I take Bitcoin.
That is another show. Boy, I tell you. William Lightfoot Sr. and Tony Lewis Jr., thank you both for sharing some time with us, your expertise, your insight, and your passion. I really appreciate it. We are going to keep an eye on this, because who knows, the D.C. Court of Appeals could make a decision within 24 hours after hearing the arguments presented by the McDuffie campaign tomorrow. So, gentlemen, again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sure. That is the Daily Drum for Tuesday, April 26th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.